Welcome to the 503 Report, where America's voice is heard. Thank you for listening online. Be sure to check out our website weekly as we bring Sacramento and the world to you. The 503 Report at www.503report.com, where America's voice is heard.
Well, you've heard us talk about here on the 503 Report that the political dagger of death for politicians might be Proposition 98 or anything to do with the children out there. Well, what about Proposition 13 for the taxpayers in California? You know, we're the ones that are paying for everything out there, so why shouldn't that be a political dagger of death? Well, let me tell you about what's going on with Proposition 13 right now. Senators Lonnie Hancock of Berkeley, imagine that, and Holly Mitchell of Los Angeles, both Democrats, imagine that, have something what's called Make It Fair, a campaign, a coalition of unions and other liberal groups to roll back and to change the structure of Proposition 13. They say that it could bring in an additional $9 billion with the B annually for local governments, schools, and the kids out there. Okay, it's facing long odds because 65% of the people 40 years ago voted for Proposition 13. We'll get in a little bit about what Proposition 13 really is. But Senators Hancock and Mitchell, they have a long and they have a hard battle up ahead. Mitchell from Los Angeles says it's targeted at the largest corporations and property owners, many of whom who have avoided reassessment in the nearly four decades since Proposition 13 passed. Hancock from Berkeley, a former mayor of Berkeley, by the way, called it a revenue and ethical issue. The proposed changes could generate $9 billion for local governments and children, is what she said as well, which would help the state avoid further fiscal crisis when the temporary, and we've been talking about this, Proposition 30 taxes run out in the next few years. We'll talk about that in our opening segment. With me, as always, my good friend to my right, Andrew Wellborn. Buddy, how you doing, pal?
Oh, man. Are the predictions coming true?
Yeah, we've been talking about this, pal.
All of the things that we've been talking here on this show, are they coming forward? And are they starting to surface the way we've been predicting that these individuals are going to start surfacing with these issues? You know, this make it fair. You know, we're going to make, just that few small group pay like everybody else. And, you know, the problem with that, obviously, is that we are making things way too expensive out here in California. We're making it way too expensive for individuals like ourselves in the studio to maybe make a commercial property investment, maybe to become an entrepreneur, making an investment in the community that we live in. And so all of this unintended consequences is coming from something that everybody wants to do in the name of the good. Hello, folks. Andrew Wobble here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And of course, guys, as we know, we are where America's voice is heard. And I'm getting kind of tired, California, and tired, America. Well, really, it's not America's issue, but right. California. I'm getting tired of all of this, the struggle that you're putting on us through taxes and you know, the ultimate problem that it's creating with the budget. We see down in Sacramento right now, the Democrats are now once again in a budget battle. The legislature now wants to go against the governor and increase that $115 billion budget proposal to $119.
They are Proposition 13, little history on there, 1% of the value of your house. So that is what is our taxes are paid on here in California. And on commercial, all property in California, 1%. It can go up according to inflation, but a max of 2%, that is the cap on that every year. Well, they want to change that, and they want to change it. They want to make it housing and agricultural to say what it is, but commercial property, which can benefit the most for, I guess, the legislature and the government to get the more money if they sell it. They want to have a two-tiered system out there. They want to make it different. California voted 65-66% 40 years ago to keep it what it is right now. It would take a two-thirds majority in the legislature and the people to change things. So, Andrew and Stan, it is a huge uphill battle that those ladies are fighting right now.
Well, they're setting the stage, as you mentioned. You know, they're working with a group called Make It Fair. You know, these organizations like to use titles like that, you know, to hide what they're doing. We're going to make it fair. You know, we're going to have the, we're looking at this one anyways. Yeah. We just keep going and going and going. But the problem with this is that what they're looking to do specifically is to put an annual reassessment on commercial properties in order to get that $9 billion for the kids, as you put it, you know, in order to be ready for the inevitable taxes, temporary taxes are going away. So, you know, the big thing that we're just doing is we just got to make people aware of this. And sounds like more and more people are starting to become aware of it, Tim. It's starting to hit the press out here in California. And then hopefully Californians can wake up to some of this assault on you, the everyday average Joe out there.
It ain't about make it fair. It's about make us poor. Let's get rid of the remaining companies and businesses in California. That's what they're trying to do.
Well, can you imagine, guys and listeners out there up and down this great state, if businesses were reassessed yearly, now you know it's not going to fall that much. They're going to have a clause in there where they can't get too far down because their money, once again, if they were to get any more, couldn't be cut again. They are just looking for ways to nickel and dime and billion dollar everybody here in this great state to death.
And once again, it makes it tougher, you know,
for
an individual and middle class maybe to try to bring themselves up out of middle class into a different level, especially real estate investors. Yep. We all know that one of the best investments and one of the most successful opportunities in the United States of America is ownership of property. And so, you know, if we open the door to one and just say, oh, it's just going to be the commercial corporate property owners. Look, mom and pops are small corporations, individual corporations, the individual buildings. Margie's Books Nook up here, for goodness sakes, up here, a local business I just referred to, is going to be affected because of this proposition change proposal.
And they've been up here for 35 years already. The theaters here in town, the ale work, just all these businesses that we have in here. It is just incredible that they keep on going. And you've talked about this, Andrew, for the last year or so, as these taxes are getting ready to end, these clauses are coming to a close, and they are every week. It seems like there's something new in the news or in the paper that they are going to try and find a way to get more money out of. They are just trying and trying. This is going to be a very difficult fight because the people of California would have to approve at a two-thirds as well to any changes as that, along with the two-thirds that they don't have the supermajority of anymore in the legislature.
Well, look, let's talk about the propositions because, see, the proposition process is something that is going to be under fire here a little bit by the Democrats. They're talking about raising the fee from the $250 filing fee all the way to $8,000. You know, I don't know. You know, I mean, when we see some of these stupid ones that come on, maybe it should be $8,000.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's deem this one stupid. So it's going to cost you $8,000, you know, to put it on the ballot. But, man, when you take a look at the Attorney General of California's website, I mean, the proposition is starting to stack up. So they're being filed. Of course, it's not indicative of how many are going to make the ballot because they still have got to get through the signature collection phase. But ultimately, look, I mean, this is next November is going to be a big election, as we know. And so a lot of these stupid initiatives are gearing up for a high opportunity of passing because of a high voter turnout, which is generally the case in presidential elections out here in California.
Do you think, Andrew, that that because they made a big deal of showing that $200 for this initiative with what they want to go. Do you think that that is going to change? I know they proposed, let's say, 8,000. Are they going to meet, do you think, somewhere in the middle and make it a little bit more difficult for the ones that are kind of stupid, that you say?
Look, I mean, obviously, I don't want that to happen.
Right.
I mean, it needs to be available, ready available for just about anybody, I mean, to be able to afford $250 in order to file something, an idea. And so I don't want to even think about interfering with the initiative process. But, you know, ultimately, it's the voters' fault. You know, you, the listener, you, the voter, the individuals who don't vote. That's why these initiatives are being passed. They're being passed by smaller and smaller numbers. And if we just had a normal turnout, you know, or an average turnout, most of these initiatives, these stupid ones, would not even pass because voters would obviously go against them.
Sure.
So that little group of voters, that little 5% of voters, are very active and loud. So when you see a very, very important policy being overturned in California by 2 million people out of a state that's approaching 40 million people, what does that really represent?
Yeah, it really does. And I wouldn't want to see that process usurped or anything either. I like that. But they do have to gather, is it 500 to 1,000 to a million signatures to get something even on there? So you can file for it, but then you have to go through the collection process, like you said.
Well, look, this is one of those perfect storm opportunities with the signatures because of the last presidential election turnout.
Right.
They only have to get about 500,000 signatures. So, you know, it's adding up. I mean, the bottom line is the small fees, the general election coming up in November, and the relatively small number of signature requirements is adding up to really create a problem. And, you know, we're going to keep everybody informed of these initiatives that are coming on the ballot. We talked about a very important one last week. We'll get into that a little bit more on the bottom part of this show, but the initiative process right now is what's really gearing up out here in California. And Californians, you need to just, you know, be aware of this and really take a little time to understand what a small group of people out here are imposing on you.
Well, they're trying each week, and it would be nice to, if we could, talk about something for more than 1 week. We have to change here because something else is happening in California, and we are trying to bring it to the forefront of the listenership out there. We were talking about the proposition. We'll talk about at the bottom of the show, but this week, Proposition 13 under fire. We got to talk about that because that is affecting all homeowners, people with property out there. That is huge for everybody in this great state.
Absolutely. For the children.
Everything. And that political dagger, that is for the children on everything.
There you go.
All right, California, it's time for something you may or you may not know. Today's date, the year of our Lord, June 12th, we're going back in time here, 1665. Two things actually happened. They're kind of interesting in the same year. New Amsterdam, we forgot what New Amsterdam once was, legally became the British and renamed New York after the English Duke of York. How many people remember or even thought that New York used to be New Amsterdam? And, of course, that same year, England installs a municipal government in New York City. 1787, the United States passes a law providing that a senator must be a whopping age of 30 years old. 30 years old, man. You know what? That's something maybe we should take a look at changing here in the United States in the future. And then, of course, 1942, Anne Frank, she gets her diary as a birthday present in Amsterdam.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you, heard every Friday right after the news at 12:15 here on 1240 KSU. We live streaming on the World Wide Web as well. And you can check us out at the503report.com, where America's voice is heard. We'll be back with the half hour show in just a moment.
Live from the high desert in the Sierra Nevada mountains, it's the 503 Report, Northeastern California's original political talk show, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And here's your host, Tim Reinertsen.
Thank you very much, Stan. Welcome back, everybody. The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you every Friday, 12:30, right here on 1240 KSU, and live streaming on the World Wide Web. Talking about Prop 13, all the propositions coming up. It's my buddy on my right. Favorite time of the year, man. He just loves when all this is going on. My good friend, Andrew Wellborn. Andrew, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, man. Proposition 13, Proposition 98, Proposition 30, Proposition 2. Now let's move on to another one called Proposition 25. That's really kind of lingering a little bit right now in the California legislature, really kind of creating a problem. Even though they're trying to downplay it, it is really creating a problem. You can see a total disagreement between the California State Legislature and California Governor Jerry Brown. And we're going to talk about this right now, coming up on this big deadline for this budget out here in the state of California. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And, of course, we are where America's voice is heard.
All right, Andrew, it is Friday. It is our favorite day of the week. And you were talking about, before we got on the air, you just love what's going on in the legislature right now. And we love getting the information out to the people. You threw a lot of numbers out there, 13, 98, 30, ready, set, hut, one. But Proposition 25 and all those others, what is going on right now, Andrew, in down there in Sacramento? Because there is a little bit of a division there, a crack with the Democratic Party.
Well, if we recall, Proposition 25 was passed back in 2010, and it mandates that the budget must be passed by June 15th. That's just a couple of days from now, yeah, right, guys?
Absolutely.
And so, as always, you know, Governor Jerry Brown, as you always point out, and we give him credit on this show, folks, about being conservative when it comes to the finances of state California, is, as we know, even though he increased that budget to a whopping right, $115 billion, dare I say, it's actually better than what his colleagues are proposing now. They're trying to jump it up to $119 billion. See, it comes back down to the things that we've been talking about coming up through the budget, coming into the budget system, season up out here in California. Look, you know, everybody's screaming for the money. You know, everybody is wanting more money than the governor's allocating for. And the reason is because that political dagger of death, Proposition 98, hogs up the money. I know I said a couple weeks ago that I was going to get really into 98. I'm going to hold off on that this week because it's really in depth. We just got too many things to talk about to really focus on the inner workings of Proposition 98. But here we are. You know, they're facing a deadline down there in the legislature. And even though they're being calm, they're trying to be cool, they're positive that they're going to come up with an agreement. We just need Governor Jerry Brown to hold firm on his current budget proposal.
All right, Andrew, he hold firm. That's the statement of the day on there. Is he going to do that? Because he has had a reign over them, even though he hasn't really said a lot, Stan. He hasn't been in the forefront of the news a lot, but he has been, like Andrew said, and we've always said, been very conservative with the money going out there.
Right.
He knows that it's very up and down right now. We're starting to get a little bit better on the economy right there. But his very far left is really going after it, wanting another 1 or 2% out there. It's just crazy right now, Stan.
Just get rid of all that money that we allegedly are going to have coming in. You know, toe the line, Governor. You've got to do it. Hold it. Someone's got to.
And I think that he is going to do that, Andrew. I hope that he can make that happen.
Well, I mean, look, otherwise we're going to see all of these crazy, stupid, you know, moves to modify Proposition 13 in order to receive $9 billion for the kids, you know, for our school systems. You know, not that, I mean, we're already proposing $65 billion for the 2015-16 budget year to go to Proposition 98 funding. But look, all of this is adding up. And folks, these are the things that we need to just, obviously, I say it all the time, be aware of. You know, Proposition 25 is mandating that the legislature passes the budget on time. We forget that little clause, or they don't get paid. They don't get paid. And so now that rush coming up here on June 15th is because they want to get paid. And so it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get the best budget deal, because the incentive is not necessarily the budget deal. The incentive is to be paid as a member of that California legislature.
Okay, they have until June 15th, which is 3 days from right now, but I believe the fiscal year starts on July the 1st. And there's always a little bit of jockeying in that 2 weeks.
Right.
The last couple of years, they have been able to get that budget passed. But this year, we seem like we were saying this today on our show, that there's more wrangling going on. There's a big difference between $115 billion, which is probably not where it should be anyway, and $119 billion, what his far left wants, Andrew.
Yeah. Let's talk about San Bernardino. I don't know if you guys caught the headline in San Bernardino, California, way down there in the southern part of the state from us, being up here in northeastern California. You know, it's an interesting decision, and I'm not sure if this is a good decision by the city of San Bernardino. And what's happened is that the bondholders are objecting to their restructure plan. And so the bondholders, good God, man. I mean, The community of San Bernardino owes $59 million in debt, $59 million in bonds. The bondholders right now under the restructure bankruptcy plan are only going to receive 1% of that payment. Now, what the city has done is prioritized the annual payment of $24 million to CalPERS for the pensions. Now, this is very dangerous to me, especially when you're looking at this. And I have to correct something last week, folks. I was saying David Reed. I have to apologize to my good friend David Reed, who is an individual I know very well up here in northeastern California. But it's Chuck Reed, the Democrat mayor out of San Jose, with this pension reform initiative that he's filed. And here we go. Voter Empowerment Act of 2016. That sounds pretty good, don't it?
It sounds really good. I'm behind that.
What is that lipstick on that pig? Let's do it. Yeah.
You know, we're going to empower the voters to be able to reform the pension. Now, what's dangerous here is that if the bond and the banks and Wall Street are not getting paid, the banks and the companies that finance public debt don't get paid, then maybe the bond companies and the bankers, maybe they should pull out of California and not finance these cities. And if that happens, what really happens, guys? I mean, if we're going to, as a community, just basically screw over the money guys, what are we going to do here? You know, I mean, so the pension plans are being prioritized down in San Bernardino. Now, to me, that's an ember that is going to have a lot of fuel that's going to be, you know, obviously thrown on it to ignite a movement. So everything is lining up in a nasty storm, I think, for 2016, November of next year. And so we just need to be aware of this. Now, voter turnout is the issue here. Now, Alex Padilla, the Secretary of State of California, is introducing a Senate bill. He's introducing a bill, Senate Bill 450, to basically to create mail voting. You know, they got all these nice little names, early voting, you know, to get rid of the word absentee voting. And so allow people just to vote by mail. I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, look, I mean, if the local government, if your county is going to send you a ballot, then take the time to actually fill it out and mail it. I mean, it's not that hard. But the big thing that we're going to have to start focusing on as state employees is that even, and I know there are a bunch of you guys out there who are not registered to vote. I know that because I read the voter registrations up here all the time. And, you know, and if we had everybody, if we had everybody registered to vote, then maybe some of the outcomes of some of our recent elections would not have happened the way they did locally. But look, if you've never registered to vote as a state employee or a government employee, this is the one time in your life you need to register to vote.
Amen.
And if even if you go into that ballot box and you don't want to vote for anything else, it must be a no vote if this pension reform initiative makes the ballot.
The Voter Empowerment Act, is that a way of just getting their numbers up to where they have majorities? Are they hiding it? It's like Proposition 47. Turning people loose, but they're saying the money was going for the
kids. Safe neighborhoods.
Oh, yeah. Is this Voter Empowerment Act just a way to where they can get people who don't really care about voting and they can put their power over them and can control them to vote certain ways? I mean, is that what's going to happen? What's going to happen here?
Who's got the power? Right? Yeah. That's the question.
I hear you, but it's pretty straightforward. It is empowering the power to the people of California within the jurisdictions. And it's really, really cleverly written, as we pointed out last week. And, you know, he's done a pretty decent job, I think, writing this. Yes, he's tried several times, and yes, he hasn't been able to get the writing correct. But I think Kamala Harris, the Attorney General out here in the state of California, is going to have a difficult time trying to interfere or rewrite this, to mess up the summary and title.
It's a lot is going on right now in California, and we have such little time. We try to get as much of the information as we can. We really invite you folks to go back and to listen to our shows on the rebroadcast as well, when you can hear those and you can and you can hear and digest all the information that we're throwing out there.
Well, look, I mean, here's the deal. I mean, some of the wall of debt that the governor has, you know, we talk about how the governor has gone into funds and special funds. And, you know, like, for instance, the motor vehicle fund took $300 million out of the motor vehicle fund. You know, I mean, look, the bottom line is that's the fund that, you know, everything that we pay basically,
right,
you know, pays for the California Highway Patrol salaries, wages, and benefits. You know, that's where the majority of their benefits come from, that generating, that revenue generating fund. So there's always some type of some type of reaction because of an action. And so the bottom line is this. This San Bernardino decision right now, I think, is going to be a major, major bump in the road. And it's going to be a point of advocacy when it comes to this Voter Empowerment Act.
Talk 257-8255-8256 and toll free at 1-866-882-1277. Your calls and more coming up on the 503 Report.
Where can your kids find fun this summer? At Lassen Library. Music, dance, poetry, and multicultural activities. Thursday mornings from 9 till 10:30. June 18th, Rhythm of the Universe. June 25th, Mexican Fiesta Day, Piñata. July 9th, Native American Music. July 23rd, Polynesian Day with a hula and luau. July 30th, Where's Waldo? Join the library for crafts, food, dance, and music. A summer reading challenge will end with program prizes for children kindergarten and up. Susanville Church of Christ invites you to join them for Personalizing Christianity by Brent Wiley of Los Osos, California. Join them for 6 faith-building lessons each night, Wednesday through Sunday, June 10th through June 14th at 7 p.m. That's at 205 North Fairfield in Susanville. Call 257-5433 for more information. This message, a community service of your favorite radio station.
The views and opinions expressed on the 503 Report do not necessarily represent those of staff or management of KSUE or Sierra Broadcasting Company, and are brought to you solely by Andrew Wellborn and the 503 Network.
Okay, California, time for some more stuff you may or you may not know. 1931, Al Capone is indicted for 5,000 counts of prohibition and perjury. Wow. 1962, United States Air Force Major Robert M. White, we forget this, he takes the X-15 to 56,270 meters. Wow, what a distance. 1967, the important one for me and my household, United States Supreme Court unanimously ends laws against interracial marriages. Wow. And then, of course, the famous one, 1987, how could we ever forget when United States President Ronald Reagan challenges Mikhail Gorbachev to, quote, tear down this wall. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And of course, guys, we are where America's voice is heard. And it's your turn. We do have a caller on the line. Hello. Welcome to the 503 Report. Thanks for joining the conversation. What's on your mind today?
Well, thank you. I just wanted to address a couple of points that you were talking about. First, about the voting. There's an old saying that bad politicians are put into office by good people who don't vote, and that's true, and we've seen the results of it. And another thing, our budgets would improve dramatically if we could given all the money to the illegals. Ann Coulter has a new book out, Adios America or something like that. Anyway, she points out that one-fourth of the Mexican population is up here. And they're collecting benefits. Anyway, I'll hang up and take your comments.
You know, voting is the important thing, and I have to tell you, you know, we're seeing a decline, not just in the way our legislatures are acting across this country. You know, I mean, 30 years of age at this point, the minimum age for a U.S. senator is kind of young, I think.
Right.
You know, I understand back in the day we talked about almost two centuries ago when they actually...
Life expectancy.
Yeah, I mean, basically he was an old man at that point. Maybe he had a little wisdom and experience. And I think that's lacking. I mean, that's lacking, obviously, in all of our legislatures across this country. I'm seeing more and more young people coming out. And, some of the things that they're saying, the talking points that are being fed to them, really, really is starting to catch my attention, guys. I mean, I've been holding off, as you know, about Baltimore and some of the issues that are happening in Baltimore. And, when it comes to this recent police video with down in Texas, McKinley, Texas, I haven't really made a comment. But, I don't like, what we're seeing here. I mean, when you see the video of all those young kids throwing the rocks at the police in Baltimore, and they got away with it, that's an early imprint on their minds, Unfortunately, I think that those lack of actions by, the people in authority, it's now creating the next generation of street thugs within those community streets because they are empowered, they're emboldened, there's no fear factor. And what gets me is that when you look at McKinley, and when you really watch that video, at the beginning, of course, all these videos, they start at a point, so you never really see what initiates any type of action by the police officers in these videos. But, when he threw the young girl down the first time, right there at that point, you're doing fine. But what we're not paying attention is how the crowd emerges on the officer while he has a suspect subdued. And so that threat immediately changes the game on the officer, for the officer. And seeing more and more crowds coming up on officers while they are performing their duties is starting to become a trend that it's a behavior that we're going to have to start addressing. This lack of respect, these individuals who are starting to promote that you do not have to listen to a police officer. Well, folks, you need to listen to a police officer when the officer is engaging in their duties. Now, the second time the officer threw the young girl down, that was the problem for me. I don't know if he had to do that the second time when he picked her up when she was just sitting. If he wanted to cuff her, he probably could have, or he could have rolled her. I mean, that was just a decision that obviously he's answered for.
Right.
And then, pulling the gun. Pulling the gun on the kids, on the 15-year-old kids. But let me tell you something, man. When you have two individuals running up on you, once again,
don't know what the intentions are
at that point in time. Yes, you're going to make sure that you get in control of the situation.
15-year-old finger can pull that trigger just as easily as a 40-year-old.
Absolutely. So, look, here's the deal. Unfortunately, I think that we're just seeing too much of this resistance in our communities, in our country, throughout our country. And, that has got to, the civil disobedience is now becoming a problem, I think, in the United States.
Is this what's happening right now? I was very young during the 60s, but can remember what was going on in the uprising of the young, the teenagers in the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Are we seeing that now a generation later? Is that what is happening right now? Is this the 60s, but the 21st century version of it right now?
I see that as what's happening. But the difference I see here is you have management. You have mayors, you have police chiefs, you have elected officials who are not backing the police in the actions that they need to take. Look, law enforcement's an ugly thing sometimes. And yeah, if they step over the line, if an officer steps over the line, he has to answer for that. But I'm going to tell you right now, I see all these people backing down, all these managers, all of these elected officials backing down and not backing the police. And what are you going to do? What are the police going to do at that point? Are we going to let them have the streets? Are we going to let the protesters run rampant? What are we going to do?
Look, you still have to do your job as an officer. I don't like this work stoppage that is happening, amongst the ranks. I get it. I understand. But you still have a job to do. Does any officer who goes out on the streets, do they want to give up their life? Do they want to become injured in order to save some drug dealing dirtbag out there?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. But that is what your duty is to perform that duty. And so, you've got to do your job always. I said the same thing to New York when they were stopping and what they were doing to their mayor at that point in time. Look, as a law enforcement officer, you have an obligation. Otherwise, go find another of job in another community. And that's going to be the case. Each community has got the ability, they've got a right to establish the rules and the guidelines for their law enforcement agencies. But, you know, I mean, ultimately there's a consequence or there's a benefit of a community making that determination. So ultimately, you know, Baltimore law enforcement, do your job. But organize and just remove the mayor, you know, find a candidate come election time, find a new state's attorney general, make that very clear. But, you know, don't put the citizens at risk, you know, because you're upset because of the actions of two.
Well, that's exactly what is happening. And you said it in your comment a moment ago, it's the elected officials, because they are looking at what's going on and they think those people that are doing all that are going to get them another term and
get
them back in. They're going to get. That's not what's going to happen. No. Do you think anybody wants to be in a situation, a city, Baltimore, one of the great cities of our great country out here, and it is just going down the toilet right now, and it's just terrible, and it pulls at my heart what's happening over there right now.
Well, once again, age or lack of age, the inexperience. The state's attorney is 30 years old, and, you know, I'm not sure how old the mayor is, but she's definitely not that old. And, you know, the lack of experience that you have in these offices, these are high offices of authority and power. And so, you know, we have to take a look at the candidates. And so that youth and inexperience, I think that, I mean, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. I think you have to be an attorney for 10 years. Out there in the field before you're eligible, for the most part, to run for a district attorney or, you know, a judgeship or anything like that. And so if that's the case, then, you know, she's definitely right there at the minimum years required to be able to run for the office. And so that experience is definitely not there, and it's showing.
Do you think, Andrew, that there is going to be a change with that? Oh, here's what I want to say. People are going to see who's out there and who's talking and who's making bullet points. And they're going to say, well, he's out there and he's saying some things. And, man, I really agree with him. But they don't research anything. They don't look into what they are really saying, what the message is, what experience they have, what is going to happen if that person gets elected. That person may have absolutely no idea what is going on. But yet somebody is out there and they are in front of what's going on and they are speaking about that. Well, we've seen history, and Stan is over there, he's just like, we've seen this over hundreds and thousands.
A la Barack Obama. I'm sorry, that's all I can come up with there.
Well, look, I mean, you know, you mentioned earlier, Tim, is today's actions the same as the generations before in the 60s? I'm going to say no, because when you take a look at what the actions in the 60s were, but basically that was being forced to go die for your country someplace where you didn't even know existed. And so a lot of that upheaval was around that Vietnam War.
Right.
And so today it's just civil disobedience. I mean, every aspect of the culture today, social media, everything the young kids are hearing, and from the music to whatever they're watching on TV, is about disrespect and it's about disobedience. And so ultimately that is the root of our problem. And so these young people are growing up with this background, and it's spilling over. They don't have the experience at this point, I think. And when you take a look at the actions that some of these individuals are doing in some of these communities, it really, really clearly shows that, first of all, the age is the problem. The lack of experience is the problem. The lack of knowledge, historical understanding is the problem. And so I'm going to switch this up to the presidential race. You mentioned Barack Obama. Let me tell you something. Marco Rubio is facing the same scrutiny, at least from me, when it comes to his lack of age to be able to run for the White House.
Well, and he is really under attack by the New York Times and other organizations out there right now about that experience. And I don't know, are they going to play that off, the media on the left, that he doesn't have any experience, when their man who's in the White House right now was the exact same thing 8 years ago?
Well, look, I mean, we can clearly, history is going to show that we've seen a Jimmy Carter second term during this country's history. This experiment's over. This president, history's going to show him as a very accomplished president, but, you know, his accomplishments have not been good for the country, and that's just going to be the way it is, and I've mentioned that before. Now, look, I was very, very, very impressed with Carly Fiorina. I saw her sit down this week, and that lady was impressive. And I have to tell you, Carly Fiorina is no joke as far as her knowledge, the way she holds herself, the way she handles herself. And she is going to be fun to watch. I'm kind of pulling for her in some avenues, some areas. I hope she makes the top 10. I hope she gets into tears to be able to debate, because let me tell you something. I think if people hear her speak, and if she comes across the way she just did this week, man, I tell you what, she could be a rising star within our party.
We have just a couple of moments left, and I'd really like to acknowledge our area up here right now, our Lassen County area. A lot of folks know that California has been in horrific drought for a couple of years, and the governor is asking for massive cutbacks up and down the state of California in water usage. And up here, we have some pretty good springs up here, and we have pretty good amounts of water, even though the snowfall has been bad as of late. But I don't know if you guys saw this, but the Lassen County, Susanville area, is number one in the state in how much we have saved.
Wow.
over all the other counties. I believe it's the county. I think it's Lassen County. Like 50% compared to what we were last year. But we were number one. Now, I know we're a smaller area, but per capita, we need to tip our hats up here. You know, we're up here in an area where we do have plentiful amounts of water, but we have done very well. We were even cutting back before what the governor and the city and the counties were asking us. So I want to give kudos to all of the folks up here in our area.
Well, we do a lot of that up here in this community, a lot of accomplishments like that that go unnoticed, because that's just the way we operate up here in this community. We're small communities, you say, but we come together during times that we need to come together.
Budget.
And just everything from the lack of taxes to being able to get by on current tax dollars.
Right.
Our county supervisors
do an extraordinary job for the last
20 years I've been up here. And, you know, some of our local control and local issues and local decisions are, you know, prudent. Yeah, we hear, you know, okay, we don't have some of the things other communities have, but same time, we don't have the tax burden on top of that up here in this community. And I gotta tell you, you know, real quick, we're going to get back on Proposition 98 in days to come. I'm not scared of that dagger. That dagger has not hurt me. There was so much to talk about today that I wanted to get out. So we'll refocus on this pension reform and how it works with Proposition 98 as the summer goes. And I have to tell you, you know, as we are starting to wrap up this show, yeah, I get this question all the time. You know, we see the city of Susanville up here in California has joined many cities throughout the state of California, in particular Fresno, California, and banning all out, or possibly banning the all out cultivation of marijuana in the community with this initiative that is going to be coming onto the ballot to legalize recreational use of marijuana. Well, look, you know, people live in the county. Yes, I mean, the ordinance was put in place. But there is a ballot opportunity for you. If you're not satisfied with this ordinance, you can take it to the ballot up here in Northeastern California and put a ban throughout the county also.
Absolutely. And Andrew, we got a quote from our favorite book coming up here, buddy.
Okay. From Peter 1:6. Be truly glad. There is wonderful joy ahead. God bless you, America.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
Now, of course, we always want to thank those men and women who go to work every day, working the toughest beat in the state, performing the duty so that you, our listener, up and down the state of California and across this nation can be safe.
Folks, we can't thank you enough for your calls and for your listenership over the past 4 years. Like I said earlier, please go back and listen to this show, what we were talking about. There's a lot of information in a short amount of time on there. You need to stay informed and be informed, and that's what we want to do here on the 503 Report. You can catch a rebroadcast weekends right here on 1240 KSHE. Saturdays at 7, grab a cup of coffee right before the news and swap shop. Sunday at 7:30 before pre-programmed material. And go to the503report.com where America's voice is heard. The last 4 years, we got all our shows on there, and you can check us out there as well. It is Friday. It's our favorite day of the week. Stay informed. Propositions, we threw a lot of them out there to you today. Look at them. Proposition 13, under attack. That's you out there, the homeowners, the business owners up and down this great state of California. Folks, have yourselves a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next Friday right here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
Let me thank you for your time.